Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. That's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, we're talking game one. Time for the Daily Ticker now. Joining us is friend of the show, Casey Holdall, FordCenter.net, Rip City Report with Joe Freeman. He's down in the Bay covering the Blazers, and he joins us now on the MVPHomeLoans.com Guild Hotline, at C Hold on Twitter. Most of you already following him, though. Casey, your overall thoughts, surprises from game one?
Overall thought was that the Blazers did not play a particularly good game on either end of the floor, which, you know, game one of the Western Conference Finals, you would have hoped to have seen a better performance. Obviously, a pretty short turnaround from going seven games versus the Nuggets, I think, obviously played into that. But I also think we saw kind of why the Warriors have been the team to beat in the last 5 years, and why few have done it, because they've got the talent, they've got the system, and, you know, they put a lot of pressure on teams, particularly on the defensive end, to make the right reads and kind of scheme the best way that you possibly can. And, you know, the Blazers just didn't really seem like they had any answers last night. So while a bit disappointing to see that out of a game one in the Western Conference Finals, you kind of take the playoff element out of it, and, you know, a team went into Oracle and kind of hung close for three quarters and then lost it in the fourth quarter, which I think we've become accustomed to seeing out of the Warriors for some time now. So in that regard, I guess really not all that surprising.
Yeah, we were joking last segment about how Stotts was like fired by the fan base after game five against Denver, then rehired, then given a lifetime contract after game seven, and now he's going to get fired again. But the defensive game plan left a lot of people frustrated. Steph Curry hitting wide open threes, and Stotts got a little testy after the game when asked about it. Your thoughts on that? And look, there's not much. Steph Curry's going to score on you no matter how you defend him. But is there ways that they could try and slow him down to not be quite as prolific as he was last night?
Yeah, a couple things there. One, yeah, I noticed the quick turnaround on the Terry Stotts popularity scale as well. It was to go from that game seven to that game one. And yeah,
he was
calling for his head. And I mean, yeah, you know, that's kind of the nature of fandom, but even that quick, I was a little surprised.
What have you done for me lately, Terry? Come on.
Yeah, exactly. What did you do on the off day, yeah, Terry? I mean, come on. So, yeah, I mean, as far as Steph goes, I mean, you're right. In some respects, you know, you're going to have to live with the fact that he is, you know, a great player and the greatest shooter in the history of the NBA. But I think, you know, if you're watching that game and, you know, and if you're watching some of the analysis after the game, and you see some of the screenshots of, you know, Steph Curry having, you know, 3 to 4 feet of wide open space to shoot from, like, that, I mean, regardless of what your scheme is, like, that can't happen, you know, like, it, so if it's a situation where you're dropping the center back too far, and that has been something the Blazers have done because they do want to try to bait teams into shooting mid-range shots. But, you know, the team like the Warriors they're not going to be tricked into doing that. And a guy like Steph Curry definitely isn't going to. So I think it really does come down to just how can you make it a little more difficult on Curry and force someone else to beat you? I mean, because this Warriors team is not especially deep. And so if you're able to not have Steph Curry make 9 3-pointers, which I believe tied his postseason record, then, you know, you've got yourself a chance. And I think, you know, the other kind of takeaway from that game as well was that the Blazers didn't do anything particularly well. So if they just cleaned up one or two things, if they didn't turn the ball over as much, right, if they kind of a few better looks from the 3-point line, you know, maybe the kind of the storyline about how are you going to defend Steph Curry, it maybe isn't as kind of predominant as it is today. But I mean, I do think that, you know, it was interesting to I wasn't able to get to the podium in time to hear Terry Stotts' press conference. And the way it works in playoffs is, you know, some guys go to the podium, some guys stay in the locker room. So you kind of have to decide how you're going to cover it. And my decision was to stay in the locker room last night and knowing that I would be able to get quotes from Damian and Terry after the fact. And to hear the players talk about their defense, particularly Mo Harkless talking about, like, hey, like, we can't let Steph Curry get wide open looks. Damian doesn't get those kind of looks. CJ doesn't get those kind of looks. How can we let a guy like Steph Curry, the greatest shooter in NBA history, get those kind of looks? Like, there, I just felt like there was a little bit of a different vibe from the players than there was from Terry last night in terms of kind of how they played that. And I think from the players, you got more of a sense that they feel like they do need to make some more adjustments and perhaps consider maybe, you know, changing the personnel, going small. Obviously, Ennis trying to kind of negotiate picks and get back out to Steph Curry is not something he is especially adept at doing, and they dropped him back anyway, so that makes it even more difficult. So, you know, it was kind of heard two different stories out of the Blazers last night, and I think, you know, when we get to practice here in about an hour down here in San Francisco, we'll maybe get a better sense of maybe what direction they're going to go in that regard, if they're just going to try to clean up what they did in game one, or if they're going to try to kind of change schematically how they're going to defend particularly Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. I think those are some answers we're looking for today.
Casey Holdall, forwardcenter.net, at C Hold on Twitter. Also does the Rip City Report with Joe Freeman, their podcast. He's down in the Bay. Kind of a two-parter for you. One, is there any update on Dame? I don't know if you had gotten word in the arena, but Doris Burke on TV had mentioned something about a hamstring. He's averaging the most minutes of any player post-first round, so I don't know if there's an update there. And then two, how much of it is the teams that he's playing against and what they're doing versus what Dame is producing out? His last six games, he's got a few clunkers in there. He's good in game six. Game seven, he did other things other than score, but was off from the field. And then last night, 4 of 12. What have you seen from Dame that's really maybe leading to some frustration from him from game to game?
Yeah, first part, I do not have an update on his hamstring. I will definitely ask him about it here today at practice. I'm guessing that he'll probably downplay it. And yeah, I mean, I did see the video as well, so I'm kind of grabbing at the back of his leg there. So, you know, we'll see what he has to say. I would be astonished if he didn't play in game two, but again, I think we can at least get a read on maybe how severe that injury is when we get a chance to talk to him today. In regards to kind of what's been done on Dame, I mean, I think, you know, at this point, the book is out on Damian. You know, it's like, teams are going to throw two, and as we saw last night, sometimes three guys at him, and they're going to force him to give the ball up. And as of right now, like, if the Blazers kind of roll guys, particularly Mo and Chief, aren't hitting shots, which I think we've seen, you know, throughout the at least the past couple games, that has not been the case, then things are going to get really difficult for him, because there's nothing to stop teams from really selling out, which I think, you know, particularly in game one, we really saw that. Like, they were throwing everything at Damian and forcing him to give the ball up. And he even mentioned, he's like, I couldn't even get shots up. Like, I wanted to shoot and I couldn't because there were so many guys around me. So, I mean, I think that the Warriors have the personnel to do that. And I think to your point, you have to have the personnel. But I feel like kind of what the players were saying in the post game last night was something to the extent of like, well, if all these other teams are selling out on our all-star guards and it's being successful, why haven't we tried something like that? Do we have the capability? Do we have the personnel to throw doubles at Steph Curry, to trap Klay Thompson from time to time? And I think, you know, we've seen, you know, throughout the years that Terry is fairly reluctant to do that. But I do think that, you know, my assumption is that you maybe try to kind of, again, fix some of the things you didn't do particularly well in game one and game two, and see if that gets you a better outcome. And if not, I think game three is when you really start to look at maybe making some considerable changes. So, I mean, I would expect that we're going to see some smaller lineups in game two. I would expect that Zach Collins will probably start to see his minutes increase, and Ennis will probably see his minutes decrease a bit. I would say that's probably the same thing for Al-Farouq Aminu, who, you know, over the past, you know, 5 to 6 games, they really haven't gotten a whole lot out of. And at a certain point, particularly if KD's not going to be out there, you know, the Blazers probably need to get a bit more offense on the floor. And if that means more Rodney Hood, and obviously he's got a bit of an injury issue as well, if that means, you know, Jake Layman possibly getting out there. If that means trying to find some more shots for Seth Curry, and then seeing maybe if Evan Turner, who kind of had something going at the end of the Nuggets series, can maybe get something going here in the Bay. I think those options are all on the table. And just to take a step back real quick, I do think that, you know, that was the other thing that the players talked about, was the urgency in making changes, because I think in some respects they don't want to wait to see if maybe they can just play better in game two. They want to see if they can actually make some changes that will affect that, because I think that maybe there's a feeling among the team that, you know, we've been here before against this Warriors team, and, you know, by the time you kind of maybe figure out what they're doing and think you have a plan for it, you know, that wave is already crashing over your head. So I think it could go either way. I think Terry's more reluctant to make changes. I think the players are maybe more pro doing that. And so I think, you know, we'll see kind of what the compromise is in game two.
Yeah. Well, I am curious to ask you, Casey, just watching that game on TV last night, it felt quiet. Like, Oracle has this reputation, and we've seen it obviously in years past, but was it kind of quiet in there last night?
It was a bit. And again, like, I don't think you can necessarily put that on the fans. A 6 o'clock start time, which, one, like, I don't think I've ever covered a 6 o'clock game before. Yeah. And every single game in the series is at 6 o'clock. And I mean, if anyone who spent any time in the Bay knows, like, it is not necessarily easy to get from San Francisco to Oakland at any time of the day, let alone at rush hour, which is when, you know, those games are happening basically. So, you know, I think that plays a pretty big role in it. I think there probably is some, you know, the fact that they have been rolling for so many years now, part of me thinks that maybe, you know, maybe the same excitement isn't there as it used to be. And, you know, I heard some things nationally about people saying, like, well, this Portland Trailblazers team, you know, kind of who gives a rip about them? So I think maybe there's kind of this notion that it's a foregone conclusion that they're going to advance. And, you know, I think it's on the Trailblazers to come out and make the fans here in Oakland and San Francisco rethink that. Because, I mean, if the Blazers can come out and get a win, I think that, you know, the series instantly becomes a lot more interesting. But I do get the sense, you know, both here in the Bay and nationally, that there is a sense that, you know, this Trailblazer team, while they're, you know, a good story and plucky upstarts, like, they don't really have the quality to play with a team like the Warriors. So I think that's got a bit of a piece to it as well. And the fact, too, that, like, the scheduling of the game seemed odd to me in that they didn't give 2 days between, you know, games one and games two. The going every other day, and particularly, you know, if you're playing on a Tuesday and a Thursday, I mean, again, I think it's, in some respect, it's a little hard to draw up interest there if you're a team like the Warriors that has had so much success over the years. So I'm curious to see what's going to be like at the Moda Center on game three, particularly if the Blazers end up dropping game two, if the fans in Portland, who are so excited about this run, if they're able to keep that optimism, that enthusiasm, if the Blazers are going back to Portland down 0-2.
There we go. Casey Holdall, ForwardCenter.net, covering the Portland Trail Blazers. Catch the podcast with him and Joe Freeman, the Rip City Report, on Twitter at C Hold. Casey, thanks so much, man. We always appreciate when you have a couple minutes for us.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.